I've had dog food.
You have?
Doggy Chow. I used to love Doggy Chow.
I used to love Doggy Chow too.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the newest episode of Girl Blogger, the podcast. I'm Brett Collins. Yeah, here again to talk about a very, very important thing. Well, I'm going to talk about two things today. Both of them very important, but one significantly much more important than the other. First, to just get it out of the way, another death. It's just too much. There's so much darkness in the world that, like, I mean, whatever. Matthew Perry, deceased, died the weekend before Halloween. Very, very sad, very tragic. I was never really the biggest Friends fan. Of course, I like it. I'm not, like, a hater on Friends. I know a lot of people, like, don't like it at all. Other people, it's, like, their entire personality. I just kind of, like, think it's a cute show, whatever. But obviously, he was amazing. I always thought he was really, like, hot in a kind of quirky way. You know, he's a cute guy. And, yeah, I actually was reading his book, like, The Something and the Big Terrible Thing is the name of it. Sorry, I can't remember the entire title. But, I mean, it was really sad. It's basically just how he's kind of lived his whole life struggling with addiction. And the interesting thing about his story is that typically when people are addicts or struggle with that much emotional issues, there's like a triggering event that happens, you know, whether it's like abuse or an accident or inherited family trauma or something. But like there wasn't either. He didn't talk about it in the book, or there wasn't something like that that kind of, you know, got him snowballing into becoming an addict. He just kind of was like wired that way, I guess. Just a very depressed person. Sorry, my cat's meowing. She's recovering from getting spayed a few days ago, and she's wearing a cone. It's kind of cute though. Anyway, Matthew Perry, RIP, we love you. You are a comedy legend. And yeah, really sad. Oh, and also one thing that I didn't see reported in the media about his death is we know that he technically drowned in his hot tub, but if you go on his Instagram, his last post is in his hot tub, which I thought was just kind of spooky and dark. But yeah, maybe that's why they didn't report it in the media, because they're like, ooh, this is too depressing and too ironic. But yeah, if you go on his Instagram, you can see. Anyway, moving on. So the two things I'm really going to be talking about this episode are, first of all, the Beckham documentary, a little late to the game, I know, it came out like almost a month ago now, I think. And then, most importantly, Britney Spears' book, The Woman in Me. Wow, this is really something to dive into. I have a lot to cover. I could honestly talk about this for hours on end if I keep remembering details from it, but I took some notes and, you know, I'm going to limit it down to what I have here. So yeah, but first get into the Beckham documentary, because I just have, this will be like a little bit quicker, and then I'll really dive into Britney's book and just how much it moved me. But okay, the Beckhams. First of all, I was a huge Spice Girls fan. Like, the most. They were like my first everything, and I was hands down obsessed with Posh the most. I really didn't recognize that she didn't sing very much in any of the songs until, you know, until later on in my adult years. But that didn't matter. I didn't give a fuck that she wasn't singing. She looked fabulous. She had the best style, in my opinion. And even though, like, all of their style kind of holds up because it's nostalgic now, but, like, Posh's style really holds up. Like, it was chic then. It was chic 10 years ago. It's chic now. Like, she always looked so hot, like the little Gucci dress vibe. Or one thing that she did that I thought was very innovative at the time, and I honestly still love it, is wearing a bra just like under a blazer. Like, I always thought that was really hot. Or wearing a bikini top as a shirt, which we see quite commonly now. But yeah, just getting that out of the way, like Victoria Beckham was probably like my first queen. Like as all gay men, we have the women that we're obsessed with. Of course, if you follow me, you know Lindsay Lohan's like my number one, but Lindsay Lohan wasn't really a thing until, you know, I was in middle school. So I had to have a different queen to be obsessed with, and it was Victoria Beckham. So yeah, I was very excited to see this. Starting off, yeah, I never really knew about David Beckham. Well, of course I did, but like to the extent of how incredibly famous he was that they really illustrate in this documentary, like he was literally like Michael Jordan status of fame, but in Europe. Like I knew he was huge and like a very important footballer, if you will, but I didn't realize to the extreme of how just significant he was in their culture. And yeah, it's kind of insane how like what he did and how he played kind of dictated the mood of all of wherever he was playing and just kind of all of Europe and football culture. Like in football, I mean soccer. I mean, if I say football or soccer, like I'm using those terms interchangeably this episode, I would never call soccer football in normal conversation, but you know, in the documentary they refer to it as that, so that's where we're going. And yeah, there's a lot of great archival footage in this. A lot of him, of course, mainly of him. Cute stuff of him like as a kid playing soccer in his backyard. And it's like, again, I think I mentioned this in like a few of my earlier podcast episodes, but like my parents were not taking video footage of me in the 90s. So like I don't know how all these people have all this footage. It's like maybe they like already had a premonition of fame and a potential documentary coming their way. But Colleen, my mother, was certainly not like pulling out the video camera to like record me you know, playing video games or doing anything at all. So we're not going to have that archival footage if we ever want it later. But whatever, it's just like interesting to me that that's a thing in this, and they had a lot of good stuff. Of course, I would love to see. Okay, wait, sorry if you hear that banging. My upstairs neighbors are like dancing around like elephants. I don't know what the fuck they're doing, but I hope it's not too distracting. Anyway, where was I? Oh yeah, the archival footage. I wish that there was more of Victoria and her childhood, but there wasn't. In fact, I kind of wish that this entire docuseries, it was four parts, it's four episodes. And since it's so long, I wish that it was like half about him and half about her. It's really just about him, and since she's such a big part of his life, she's in a good chunk of it, but they really don't dive into like her life story and like, you know, just more details about her, which I feel like people would really love. And I don't know, but maybe this was just like more of a sports doc or something, but whatever. Okay, yeah, what else? Oh, back to just me loving the Spice Girls. Just a side note, my first concert ever when I was in first grade was the Spice Girls, and my dad took me, and my grandma was there, and my cousin. So yeah, that was a pretty lit crew. And I remember I wore these like Skechers slides that kind of had like a platform to them. I think they were probably girls' sandals, but like they were like kind of gender neutral enough that I convinced somebody to buy them for me. And I just thought like I was turnt because I had like kind of platform shoes, because you know that's what the girls were all about in the Spice Girls, is like those platform sneakers and whatnot. But that was another thing. Like, I don't think Victoria ever really wore those. That was more of like all the other girls' things. Victoria was wearing her like gladiator stilettos and pumps and yeah, just other things like that. That was chic. Okay, these upstairs neighbors need to quiet the fuck down. What could they be doing? Is that a dog? Whatever. Okay. Yeah. Oh, my favorite part probably of this entire docuseries is when they first get into the whole Victoria thing and kind of how they met, and they pull up the wannabe music video that's playing on TV. And apparently this is true because David confirmed it and his teammate confirmed it, and they were together. And David looked at the music video and was like, I'm going to marry that one. I'm going to marry that one in the black dress. I'm going to marry her. And the guy was like, you don't think shit like that actually comes true? And of course, we all know it did. But I mean, that's just kind of amazing that that's something that really happened. He's watching a music video and points out the one he's going to marry, and they're still together over 20 years later. Yeah, that's pretty cute, if you ask me. Yeah, it's like their love story is kind of the most interesting part of this documentary. There's just way too much dumb footage of, like, actual soccer games. Like, I don't give a fuck. I don't really even know what's going on. Like, I always think that, like, when any sporting game is on, like, especially, like, American football, like, I cannot comprehend what I'm looking at in the slightest. It looks like there might as well be, like, white noise playing on the screen, you know, like, just, like, static, because I honestly think I could be more focused on that than all of these other, like, soccer's not as bad as American football when it comes to watching. Like, I can kind of, you know, get a bit of an understanding as to what's happening, but it's still just way too abstract for me. So, like, there's a lot of footage of soccer in this, and I just don't know what's going on. I wish they could have cut out literally, like, probably, like, a half an hour's worth of soccer footage from each episode. It's really just way too much. But, yeah, that's my biggest complaint, I'd say, of this docuseries. But, it's just insane how famous they were all together, like, the two of them getting together. There's this great moment with Anna Wintour talking about how she put the Spice Girls on the cover of Vogue, and she's like, oh yeah, basically because my daughter wouldn't shut the fuck up about them, she was so obsessed, she's like, so I had to put them on a cover. And they were kind of a bit of a subversive choice for a cover of Vogue back then. Like, of course they were so popular that it made sense, but sometimes Vogue gets a little too, like, uppity about who's allowed on their cover. Like, if I'm thinking back, like, I remember it was a really big deal that, like, Lena Dunham was on the cover, but Girls was so popular that she kind of just had to put them on the cover. And same when Kim and Kanye were on the cover, it was a bit controversial, even though they were the biggest thing at the time. It's just, like, these people that don't exactly align necessarily with Vogue's aesthetic being on the cover was, like, kind of whatever. But I love that they put them on the cover. And they were pretty much just, like, royalty, is what I gathered. Like, people were just as obsessed with them as I feel like they were with, like, fucking Princess Diana. And then, like, things get kind of scary when they talk more about the games. And, like I had said, like, not realizing how famous he was and how he kind of set the mood for pretty much all of Europe, it seems. Like, anyone that watched football, where it's, like, there's this one game where he, like, penalty kicks this other player from another team, and the player from the other team, like, is being interviewed in the documentary and, like, admits now, he's like, oh, I was totally hamming it up, he barely touched me, like, it wasn't a serious attack on me at all, or whatever you want, penalty on me at all. And David Beckham was given a red card and ejected from the game, and then the coach basically, like, to the press is like, oh yeah, if David hadn't have done that, like, we probably would have won, like, it's all his fault. And just, like, shamelessly throws him under the bus. And then, like, the entire world, it seems, was just, like, beyond against him and villainized him to an extent that is just so crazy and would never fly today. Like, literally, like, things saying he should kill himself. I think there was literally, like, a drawing of him, like, hanging from a noose. It was just so fucked up. Like, I would have had a full mental breakdown if I were him and never recovered. So it's amazing that he not only got through that, but was able to play soccer. Like, it's just so nuts. Like, tabloids like that really were just beyond unhinged. Like, it makes me think of this one of when, like, Lindsay Lohan's, like, whole, like, bad, like, jail thing was happening. I think it was around, like, 2010, and some article, I think it was from Gawker or some, like, random outlet like that, wrote an article that was, like, Lindsay Lohan's best next career move would be to die. And it's like, are you fucking kidding? Like, how is that even legal to print? It's just so dark and fucked up, like, suggesting that she should die to advance herself. Like, ugh. But that's pretty much on par with what was being said about David Beckham at this time. It was just beyond outrageous. Another kind of takeaway, like, that I got from this is kind of David could be kind of shitty to Victoria, or I mean, it's just kind of men in general, I guess, but, like, they kind of make a joke of it, but it's really fucked up that the birth of their second child, I forget which boy is the second child, but she's literally in the hospital about to give birth, and he's like, oh no, I have to do a photo shoot with Beyonce and J-Lo. And it wasn't even really a photo shoot, at least not what they show. It's like a press meeting where they like were photographed like on a red carpet basically, but they're promoting for Pepsi for this commercial they did together. And it is a great commercial, by the way. I've posted it on my Instagram before. It's fab. But like, to just like blatantly miss, like, I'm sure he could have gotten out of that. Like, it's just I don't know. If I were Victoria, I would be fucking livid if somebody did like that or did me like that while I was pregnant in the hospital. Like, Jesus Christ. And then they do kind of in a roundabout way discuss about when he cheated on her, but they don't outright say it, which I'm sure Victoria made sure of when this documentary was being created, because I feel like if they did outright say it, it would kind of overshadow everything else and all of the, you know, snippets taken from this documentary that would be put to promote it would be like all about this affair he had, which is really just such a small anecdote in the trajectory of his life and their relationship. So they touch on it because I think they wanted to be real, but they don't like really dive into it that much. Like, if you're not paying close attention, you could kind of miss it. But yeah, overall, I loved watching this. It just makes me remember how funny she is and how cute I think their relationship is. Like, I don't give a fuck about soccer, but I give a fuck about them. And they're just like kind of couple goals to me, even though I know you just talked about how he cheated on her. But, you know, men cheat, men lie, can't be trusted. But what are you gonna do? Yeah, there's this really funny clip that I'm sure you've probably seen on Instagram by now. If not, you should look it up, where she's like, Victoria's like, we were very working class. Our families are very working class. And he just interrupts immediately. And David's like, oh, be honest. Be honest. No. What car did your drive, Dad? What car did your dad drive you to school in? And she's like, well, it's not a simple answer. He's like, oh, just say it, one word. And she's like, well, it was a Rolls Royce. And then he's like, thank you, and leaves the room. And it's just funny. Oh, and then there's another part where he's like, do you want to be interviewed or something to Victoria? And she's like, no, I have to go to work. I'm going to the fashion factory. And they're like, oh, really? And she's like, yeah. And David's like, no, you're not. Where are you going? And she's like, oh, to get a facial. And it's just like, I mean, it's, again, me repeating it doesn't sound as funny as it was, but I loved it in the moment when I was watching it. Okay, that's a wrap on Beckham. Give it a try if you want. Again, I warn you, there's a lot of footage of soccer games that you could easily just fast forward through, so maybe do that. But worth seeing, and yeah, worth listening to. Pretty interesting, especially as an American. Like, if you lived in Europe, you've probably, you know, seen way too much of this. But moving on to the highlight of this episode, Britney's memoir, The Woman in Me. So I've been very excited for this memoir ever since she announced it. I don't even know how long ago it was that she announced it. Was it like a year ago, over a year ago, whatever? But oh me, oh my, this book moved me. I told my friend Connor, who's actually like guest on one of the episodes of this podcast, when I listened to it, I listened to the audiobook narrated by Michelle Williams. Great choice. I was like, now that I understand more about Britney, it's almost like I understand myself better. And I honestly stand by that and think it's valid, because like, Britney was so formative to me growing up, and I was such a fan and like, you know, just wanted to relate to her so much. So now that I'm hearing the truth about her story that I've like, you know, seen through the media, the lens of the media my whole life, basically, it's just very, you know, it's an insight to see like, oh, like this person formed me as a human and now I'm learning more about them. So it's just kind of an interesting thing. And I remember I posted on my story, I was like, okay, now it's Lindsay Lohan's turn to write a memoir, because we got Britney, we got Paris, and, you know, Lindsay, the trifecta, the Holy Trinity, we need hers. But yeah, so the book is called The Woman in Me. I don't really dive for Michelle Williams. Like, I don't really think about her much as an actress. She's a great actress, of course. But something about that choice of having her is really just so perfect. Like, I think it is because she's, like, a more serious actress and just, like, an eloquent person. There's something very classy about her that it kind of just, like, elevates this book to another level. And I honestly think that Michelle Williams will get a spoken word Grammy. So she deserves it. But, yeah, I was a little worried about this book that it was going to be clear that somebody else wrote it, or that they were going to beat around the bush too much. They weren't going to answer many questions. They weren't going to dive into like her true feelings about things, or just kind of like the reality of what happened with a lot of the shit we know when it was dark. But no, this book covers fucking everything. Like, Brittany spills the tea. It's piping hot. She does not hold back. And you can tell it's very much written in her voice just based on the way she writes on Instagram. Like, she doesn't write like that throughout the whole book. However, the tone of everything and the word choice and, like, you can just tell, like, this is coming from Brittany. Who knows if she actually sat down and typed it up herself? That would be very surprising to me. But she certainly had a heavy hand in writing this book and creating it just based on everything. But okay. Oh, heavens, there's just so much to cover in this book. And, like, I'm going to give away stuff in this recap. FYI, there's going to be plenty of spoiler, you know. I mean, I'm just going to talk about the book. Like, if you want to hear about it, I'm going to say all the juicy details. But with that being said, I suggest that you still listen to it because it's an amazing story. And it's Brittany. We need to support our queen. Okay, first and foremost, I'd say the biggest message of this book is that the book is sending is that Brittany wants everyone to know and be fully aware of how unfairly she was treated and punished for the mistakes she made. And I mean, mistakes you can put in quotes because these are all just common things that any person does in their young adulthood that, sure, you can get, you know, you learn your lesson and maybe you don't do it again, but a lot of the things she did aren't normally punishable to people by law or by family members or whatever. It's more of just kind of like, oh, I was being a mess and now I'm going to clean it up, whatever. But, like, I'd say that's the biggest message is she was like, I want you all to see how fucked up this was and how unfairly I was treated. And I think she did a good job at sending that message and makes things pretty clear in this book that, yeah, this was not the appropriate consequence for what she had done. I mean, oof. But, okay. The thing that's crazy to me about all this, I was thinking about earlier, is, like, how much all of this was just in plain sight for us, just as, like, even just as fans and, like, people paying attention to Brittany. Like, there are things that were covered in the media that we saw that we should have pieced together that were fucked up, but sadly, it just, like, kind of wasn't what people did at that time. Like, the Free Britney movement and how that has made so many things come to light and kind of really got the ball rolling and ending her conservatorship. Like, that could have happened over 10 years ago. Like, that could have happened when the conservatorship started, like, I think, was it in 2008 or whatever? Like, we should have, like, it was fucked up this entire time. It didn't really get even more fucked. It did get more fucked up because it went on so long, but, like, just this happening in the first place was insane and never should have happened. And it's just, like, it kind of is made clear with the conservatorship in the book and just kind of a lot of other things where it's like, oh yeah, that is super fucked up. How did we just kind of all accept that happening that way as a culture? But, yeah, okay, where should we even begin? I mean, the beginning of the book is just all about Brittany's sweet little Louisiana childhood, like, nothing too glamorous, and I honestly didn't retain that too much of that portion of the book because it just, I mean, it was interesting to me for sure, but, you know, we wanted to get more into, her fame years and when we all knew Brittany to be the Brittany that we know, but it is still interesting to hear about her life before that. And she kind of gives a backstory on her dad and other people that were really toxic influences in her life later. Not toxic like Brittany is toxic, but, you know, standard toxic, not good people, psycho. Apparently her dad's dad was a total psycho to her, and she kind of explains how rationalizes that maybe that's why her dad ended up how he is, but I don't know. Yeah, so just kind of a bit about that, her family and, like, her parents. Doesn't really talk much about her brother. I honestly forget she has a brother sometimes, but yeah, just kind of Brittany doing a, you know, psychotherapy breakdown on her family tree, if you will, in the beginning of the book. And yeah, she just kind of really gets involved in professional show business really quick. It's kind of crazy to me, and it just kind of shows us how talented she is. And that's another thing that's sad to me that I think people forget is, like, Brittany's an incredible performer, incredible dancer, really good singer. She's actually, that voice that she sings in, the kind of, like, baby voice, I've read is what they studio wanted her to sing in that type of voice for her first album because they thought it was easier for people to sing along to. Her natural singing voice that she did, like, on the Mickey Mouse Club, if you look at it, or, like, she was on, like, Star Search or something like that as a kid, she, like, belts, kind of like how Christina would, or, you know, a lot of great singers like Mariah Carey. Like, she wouldn't hit, like, high notes like Mariah Carey, but just that style of singing is kind of what she used to do, and she was really good. But I think, and honestly, the music execs were, like, kind of right that, like, when you sing that way, it kind of limits what type of pop music you can do. And it's just harder for people to sing along because a lot of people don't know how to fucking sing like that. But, yeah, like, so she gets going into serious show business really fast. She auditioned for the Mickey Mouse Club underage, and they still wanted her, but then were like, oh, we legally can't take you because you're too young. So she's like, damn. So then she immediately gets an understudy role on Broadway, and I love this fun fact, and I actually knew this before reading it, but I love that she talked about it. So there's this Broadway musical called Ruthless that I've actually seen before. It's probably the best musical I've ever seen. It's basically the story of the Bad Seed, like, as a musical, which is about, like, an evil little girl that kills people. And in the musical, she kills a classmate to get a role in the school play or something. It's just fucking funny. But Laura Bell Bundy, who originated Elle Woods on Broadway when they did the Legally Blonde Broadway show, she was the little girl in the musical, and then Brittany was her understudy, and then her other understudy was Natalie Portman. And just to think that Natalie Portman and Britney Spears, like, had the same job basically at the same time and were, like, in each other's lives in a way is just so amazing to me, and it makes me so happy. I wish that they, like, remained best friends. They, like, hosted a New Year's event, like, years and years later when they were both, like, 22 or something. But yeah, I wish that they were besties and remained in touch, but sadly I don't really think that was the case. But yeah, so after she was done being that understudy and she was old enough to be on Mickey Mouse Club, they, like, immediately took her on. And that's, we know, we get the iconic cast of, like, Justin Timberlake was on it, Ryan Gosling, Christina Aguilera, obviously. And then, like, Carrie Russell was on it right before them as, like, an older girl. And I feel like there's some other kind of famous people. And then we also, if you know anything about Jessica Simpson, she was almost on Mickey Mouse Club, but she, like, blew it right at the end and, like, fucked up something in her audition and wasn't on it anymore. But yeah, things just went kind of remarkably well in Britney's career from then on. You know, right after Mickey Mouse Club, she, you know, got her record deal. She was thinking about doing a girl group because that's what Justin did, but then her team decided she should go solo. And I mean, thank fucking God, like, Britney as a girl group, never. Like, we need Britney solo, we need Britney by herself. I couldn't imagine anything different. And then yeah, Baby One More Time is obviously her first single on her first album, and she talks about how they wanted her to be, like, an astronaut or, like, a space queen or something in this music video version they had, music video idea they had for Baby One More Time. And then it was just Britney, the artistic genius, who decided that she should be a schoolgirl in it. And I mean, could we ever imagine anything different for the Baby One More Time video? Like, Britney, thank God you saved the day on that one, because we love it. And yeah, again, just kind of reiterating, like, with that and, like, revisiting these old music videos of her, like, she just had such charisma and was probably one of the best dancers of any pop star ever. I mean, aside from, like, Shakira or Janet Jackson, I'd say Britney was definitely the best dancer, like, better than Madonna. Like, yeah, Britney could fucking dance. Like, looking at these old videos of her, it's like, sometimes you forget, like, because not only did she do it in her music videos, but, like, her live performances were all dancing, and, like, very intense dancing that you don't see any pop girlies today even attempting. So yeah, she's kind of like, oh God, she was just so fucking good. Yeah, so the other thing that's interesting and kind of what made me reflect on Britney that I feel like people, I don't know if they forgot, but they should just remember, like, Britney really took the thick of the hate at this time. Like, this was obviously before cancel culture, before mental health awareness. Like, people were not so insensitive back in this time, and, like, just how much hate she got and how, like, her wearing a crop top was just, like, too sexy and people thought she was a horrible influence and, like, she shouldn't, like, children should not be looking up to this girl as if she was, like, some fucking prostitute, like, crass, like, you know, like, dropping F-bombs and sex slurs and all this shit. I mean, it's, like, all of her stuff was, like, pretty appropriate and, like, very PG compared to a lot of things today, like WAP or something. Like, Britney was not talking about her wet ass pussy in any song, you know? It was very cute and, like, whatever. I don't know. I feel like it's just the tone of society has changed in the way we, like, talk about things, especially about women, where it's like, back then, even, yeah, it's like, I feel like sometimes, like, things like Playboy, or I don't know, maybe Playboy, it's just, like, weird. Like, why did Britney get so much hate? She was really just, like, I guess the only example, and, like, somebody needed to point a finger and call somebody a slut, and unfortunately, it was her. And it's like, I guess when you're putting yourself out there as a solo artist, you're, you know, opening yourself up for the amount of criticism. But yeah, I feel like she just kind of got caught in the wrong time to be presenting herself like that, because people were so unhinged in their, you know, comments and, like, what was deemed appropriate to print as headlines and shit. Like, kind of going back to what I was saying earlier about the, like, Lindsay Lohan article where someone said, oh, her best next career move would be to die. Like, Britney was getting shit like that all day long, and she just took it. And, like, it's amazing that someone can not only, like, take that much criticism, but continue what they're doing and thrive. So, like, we've gotta respect our girl. And we honestly all owe her an apology. The entire world owes Britney an apology for what we let happen to her. Oh, it just breaks my heart. But, yeah, that's definitely a point that I had to make. Yeah, and then, like, again, it's just, like, it's kind of, like, God, like, one thing after another with things that she just had to deal with, where it's, like, so then she breaks up with Justin, and, like, she genuinely loved him, and, like, they basically had an entire childhood together. Like, he was her first love, and, like, she thought that the relationship was really real, and if you heard from some of the promotional bits that got released about this book, you'll know that she got pregnant with Justin, but they were only 19, and she was basically forced to have an abortion. Which, yeah, 19, like, that is extremely young. I don't know anyone that is really prepared to have a baby at 19, even if you were as rich as they both were, you know, coming up as big pop stars at that time. But, like, so yes, I understand why they would, you know, go the abortion route, but it's still, like, you can tell that, like, that's what was most important to her. And she back then was probably like, oh, I love Justin. Like, we're having a baby, you know, like, that's what people in love do. And I fully believe she would have wanted to have it just because, you know, she was still with him, but then they didn't. And, oh, God, says that he apparently broke up with her via text message, not because of the abortion, but, like, later on. It doesn't seem like it was that much later on. And now makes people rethink the Every Time music video, the one directed by David LaChapelle, which I love, with, where she's, like, in Vegas and then she, like, drowns in the bathtub. Apparently she told David LaChapelle when they were going to film it, she's like, I want to die in this music video. And she, like, does, but I think maybe they thought that was too dark, so that's why they kind of have her, like, come up out of the bathtub at the end. So it's like, oh, she didn't die. But there's also, like, a lot of footage of a baby in that music video. And if you look at the lyrics, it very is clear that that is about an abortion. It makes the most sense. And yeah, just very sad, because it obviously had a huge impact on Britney and says that it was one of the hardest things she's ever had to go through. So, like, fuck, that sucks. And then to add insult to injury, after they broke up, her and Justin, he kind of goes on this narrative that, like, she cheated on him. And that's what the music video Cry Me a River, his song, kind of, that's the story that tells. And it's just like, are you fucking kidding? Especially, like, now having this insider information for him, it's just, like, such a betrayal. Whether or not it's, like, sure, you can just say maybe that's, like, the artistic path you took, but, like, that's what we as the entire world listening took from it. So I don't know, it just seems like a real stab in the back to do after that whole ordeal, after breaking up, and then to, like, say that that's what happened. And then Brittany says that Justin actually cheated on her, and she doesn't say with who exactly. I think it's multiple people, but one of them, we can kind of, if you do a little bit of digging, I believe it to be Jenna Dewan, as in like Jenna Dewan, who was married to Channing Tatum, because she was a dancer with NSYNC, and Brittany says that she was a dancer, and she's like, oh, I don't want to say who she is because she's quite popular now, and she has like kids and stuff. So yeah, I think it was Jenna Dewan. So Justin cheated on her with Jenna Dewan, according to me. I don't have that, you know, factual, but based on the evidence presented, I believe that that's what happened. And yeah, it's just kind of what's fascinating to me about Brittany and her kind of relaying all of like these traumatic things that she had to go through during this time, and how much hate she was getting, and how the scrutiny and just the chaos of the paparazzi, it just, it is a lot. And it's crazy how someone like that, like Brittany, was such a commercial success during this time, always building new things, always breaking numbers in terms of, you know, her record sales and just like her music charts and everything. Like, she was so incredibly successful, but then with that was just like such a backlash of hate. It's just, I don't know, it reminds me of like, there was just always more hate than praise. It kind of reminds me of people's attitudes toward the Kardashians now, because most people, it's almost like people are embarrassed to admit they like the Kardashians. People hate on the Kardashians, people this, that, but it's like clearly their fan base is huge because they're the most followed on social media platforms, and they have all these businesses that are incredibly successful, which is why they keep making more businesses. So it's like, why do we as a culture and in the world, like, clearly we like things and we like people, but then when they succeed to such a level, there's just this undeniable amount of hate. Like, I think Kendall talks about it on one episode. She's like, I love like the opportunities of what I get to do. She's like, but it's just so insane to me how literally everything I do, everything I post, any choice I make gets an insane amount of hate. And it's like, everyone's entitled to their own opinion, yes. And maybe it's just because they are on such a huge scale with such an audience, but like, it is interesting to me how there's this juxtaposition of like, oh, clearly this is one of the most famous people in the world and we love them so much, which is why they're so famous. Yet on top of that, it seems as though everyone hates them. It's just, yeah, it's a little confusing. And honestly, Paris Hilton was a lot like that during this time as well. So I don't know. It's just, I wonder if Britney rose to fame as a 17-year-old now, like, how things would go. I mean, we'll never know, but she, that mentality of the way she was treated would not fly today. Okay, fast forward to when she meets fucking K-Fed after her, I didn't realize until this book how Britney was very much affected by the Justin breakup, and she really had a hard time with it and kind of wanted to, like, not be famous anymore because of how much she was struggling, but, you know, just kept on pushing for everything that she was offered in her career. She just really couldn't stop. And then she meets K-Fed. I don't remember exactly when. I think, yeah, he was a dancer on tour with him or something. But she kind of fell for him for, like, it's kind of sad, just like a simple reason. He, like, basically just, like, gave her a lot of attention and seemed really interested in her and, like, seemed comfortable spending time with her. And it's just crazy that no one else was really giving that to her, but I guess she was probably so isolated and closed off as a huge celebrity, she didn't get the chance to, like, organically meet guys and just chill with them and stuff. But she says this one line, like, oh, sometimes a girl just wants to be held in a pool, because that's what her and Kevin Federline were doing. And it's just like, oh God, like, yeah, that's true, but, like, yeah, I think it's just a testament to how famous she was that, like, she just wanted something as simple as that, and, like, something as easy as that is why she fell for Kevin Federline. Oh, on a side note, she does talk about her fling with Colin Farrell that apparently lasted about a week. It lasted longer than just that premiere that they went to together. I forget what movie I posted about it recently, but those famous photos of when they're on the red carpet together, and, like, I need to reread that because I think I missed some parts about what actually happened, but I do remember her saying that it was more than just that night. It was like a week long or maybe a little bit longer of a fling, but, like, ugh, I wish they were a couple. Like, what if they got married? Now, that would have been like Posh and Bex. Like, Brittany and Colin, like, that would have been a power couple for sure. Kind of a mess, but, like, I would have lived for it. I mean, we all would have. But instead, she went with Dumpy K-Fed, whatever. She, like, marries him. I don't know. I kind of liked how, like, a little white trashy they were. Like, it was kind of cute. I remember, like, after Newlyweds, the Jessica Simpson, Nick Lachey reality show came out. I think Brittany and Kevin, it was called, like, Brittany and Kevin Chaotic. And it was, like, all of, like, their own recorded footage. It was very, like, kind of shockingly low budget for who they were at the time. I remember they kind of tried to, like, edit it with, like, filters to make it look cooler, but it was really just, like, so not chic. There wasn't much to do with it. I don't know. It was just kind of a mess. But, like, if anyone doesn't remember, like, that was a reality show, a very brief reality show that existed for a minute. And yeah, I feel like it's when she got divorced from Kevin, because that marriage just didn't work out. That's when shit really starts to hit the fan. And she makes it clear to readers that even though it was painted, the picture that was painted during that time during her divorce is that, like, oh, she was unhinged, she was going crazy, and that, like, Brittany was off the rails, is that, like, it really wasn't that crazy. It's what people were making of it that was crazy, if that makes sense. So it was, like, the paparazzi, the tabloids, the constant attention, and, like, the kind of, like, windstorm that the media created about the divorce and her behavior is what actually made it bad. But she's like, really, I was just kind of, like, going out sometimes, and, like, you know, I wasn't really giving a fuck about what other people wanted me to do, and kind of just, like, taking control of, you know, her social life at that time, because she really didn't have that before. Like, she was always touring, recording, press. She did Crossroads, you know, like, she, yeah, like, didn't really have time to fully, like, live college years, which is another thing that, like, Lindsay Lohan, you know, I remember that so vividly. But with Lindsay, it was a little different because, like, the schedule is not as grueling for an actress unless you're, like, always on set. So, like, that's kind of a different story, but it's the same, like, kind of explanation of, like, oh, these are the years that, like, as a young adult, when you're, like, from 18 to 24, I'd say, when you really want to, like, hit the clubs, hit the bottle, like, experience new fun things, like, go out, like, stay up, like, that's just kind of what we want to do, like, as human beings during that time of our lives. So to say and kind of ridicule and shame anyone, and especially girls, I feel like, is really just kind of, like, unnecessary and unwarranted. And it's like, come on, like, girl just wants to, like, turn up at the bar for a minute, like, we should let her. But yeah, so, like, even though it seemed like shit was really hitting the fan, it's really just because that's what was being told to us. But, like, she really wasn't that out of control, she says. And she says, and, like, this, not to, like, think Brittany's lying, but, like, the one thing that I'm not sure if she's fully admitting is she says the only drug she's ever done is Adderall, which, like, I believe that she did Adderall, of course, but she says she really just drank and did Adderall. She doesn't like smoking weed, which that I believe, but, and it's like, you probably did a bump here and there, girl. Like, did cocaine 10 to 15 times, as Lindsay would say, but maybe she didn't, which is pretty impressive because it definitely was probably offered to her. Like, and it's really just cocaine. Like, I don't think anyone, maybe she took, like, MDMA or something like that, but I don't, or ecstasy, but yeah, like, not sure about that. However, that being said, I never think Brittany was a drug addict, you know? Like, I don't think that is ever where she was in her life. And she had two kids at this point, so, like, people were being even more critical of her and calling her irresponsible, but she's like, my kids always had a sitter or were with someone. Like, they were, I never left my kids alone, which, like, obviously, she's Britney fucking Spears. Like, she can afford nannies and everything. But yeah, she really just, like, kind of went out for a little bit, and that period of time wasn't that long. It was really just, like, a few months in 2007, and she, like, makes a clear point to talk about how much she loves Paris Hilton and how much, like, Paris kind of guided her and, like, welcomed her in and just kind of was a true friend to her, which I thought was really cute because it makes you realize that, like, Brittany really didn't have a chance to make any real friends her age. Like, even other celebrities, like, she just really wasn't, you know, clicking with anyone on a genuine level. And she says this thing multiple times throughout the book where she feels like Benjamin Button, kind of like she's aging in reverse, which is pretty obvious, and I believe that now because, yeah, she seems very childlike and very kind of immature in the way she behaves now, especially as we all see on IG with the dance videos and the outfit changes and whatever weird shit she does. But she says that she felt more like a grown-up in the beginning of her career than she does now, which seems accurate. And honestly, that is a behavioral concept that should be studied in universities, like Britney Spears syndrome. Like, this is what happens to you. And I mean, if you think about it, like, that's what happened with Michael Jackson. Like, it's what happens with a lot of people that experience that level of fame starting from such a young age. It just fucks you up. Like, people forget about how unnatural fame is. Like, that is not something that people are really born to experience, and only very few experience it, and extremely few experience it on that level. So yeah, and then like the whole shaving her head thing happens, and she explains that that really happened. I used to have a theory that it was because she was gonna get hair drug tested, so she shaved it off, which maybe there's still an element to that, who knows. But she says that it was basically like her way of completely taking control, being like, fuck you, I've been forced to work out my whole life, I've been forced to do this, like, kind of the most valid excuse you could have would be like, well, now I can't perform because I shaved my fucking head, so what are you going to do with me now? Kind of just like as a big fuck you, and as a way to kind of like, you know, drastically alter her appearance to where people are like, oh, well, now she can't do the photo shoot, or now she can't do this because she has a shaved head. So it was kind of like her, like, get a, you know, like her way to like stay home sick from school in a weird way. I mean, I just made that up. I don't know if that really works as a metaphor, but you get it. And yeah, so like, good for you, Brittany. And then around then is when she kind of started also dating this photographer that was like a paparazzi, but she's like, he was my friend and whatever. I'm sure probably not the best influence on her, but like, you know, you're grasping at straws at that point. If her family is out to get her, her team is out to get her, they all were just trying to wrangle her because all of their livelihoods depended on her. So it's kind of like when you see this person that has been so kind of uniform in what they do for their entire career up to that point. You know, she was very, you know, regimented in, like, I'm sure going to rehearsals, going on tour. She just never stepped out of line until now. So now that she was doing that, people were freaking the fuck out. People meaning her family and her entire management team. And she fled to Mexico with this paparazzi guy that she was basically like dating or whatever. And that's when like everyone fully ambushed her, because I think they were like, oh, she's gone to a different country, like she's not well, like what the hell. And it was like they weren't kind of stepping back and realizing like, oh wait, I think she was only like 25 or 26 during this time. So it's like, and she just had no chance to like live out doing things like this ever. So it's like, why the fuck wouldn't she want to do this? And she, when in Mexico, they basically like ambushed her and like forced her back to the States. And like this whole thing of when they like took her, her mom like called the like ambulance and cops, and like there's photos where she's like taken on a gurney and being like forced into an ambulance. And like, typically when people are, typically when people are on gurneys, they're like passed out, unconscious, but she's like fully sitting up, awake. Like, they forced her to be on that, I think, for the photos. Like, there's just so much sabotage going on in Britney's life. It's just beyond fucked up. And yeah, after that incident was, I think they probably used that, the footage from that and the photos, as her dad, I think that her dad, her parents, her team were all kind of conspiring, coming up with this plot of how to whip her into shape and get her in line again, and basically force her to behave in order so that they could all, you know, continue profiting off of her, essentially. And that is when the idea of the conservatorship came about. And in the conservatorship, for anyone that somehow doesn't know, basically means that she'd be treated as a minor in the terms of the law, and somebody would be appointed her guardian, and it was her father, so she wouldn't really have control over her finances, wouldn't have full control over where she wants to go all the time. She would have like a curfew, basically just treated as a child. Or a lot of times people in conservatorships are disabled and kind of incapable of caring for themselves, or a lot of times conservatorships are for a very limited time until a person can kind of get back on their feet and start functioning normally. and then they end. As we know, Britney's went on for over a decade, and she was working full-time the entire time she was in it. And not only that, but, like, performing and doing everything that she was before the conservatorship. So the fact that this even happened is just fucking insane. And the reason it happened, she explains, basically, is that her kids were the main threat into pushing her into complying for this conservatorship. If she didn't comply, then basically Kevin would get full custody and they would have all of this erratic, you know, media footage of her being essentially incompetent mother to prove why she couldn't have custody. So she basically complies to the conservatorship so she can still see her kids. Her dad got $16,000 a month as her guardian in the conservatorship, and he also later, when she did her Vegas residency, which happened a few years later, he got royalties from that. And yeah, he just fucking banked off her. And yeah, you know, she followed the rules because she felt that that's the only way she could have done it in order to see her kids and basically just live. Like, it kind of seems as though it was a survival tactic for her in, you know, agreeing to this horrible situation that she was in. And yeah, oh, Brittany, it's just, there's just so much to cover, honestly. Like, that's pretty much a big chunk of it. And then it's like everything from there is like just like a different series of events of her like being forced into this treatment facility, not even really for drug addiction, but because like she took like energy pills and they thought she was like, you know, going in a bad direction. So it's just like sad how much they honestly trained her like a dog. Like, as if a dog isn't following your orders, you like send them back to boot camp. And that's kind of like what they did with her. It was like they really just viewed her as a product, and it was so dehumanizing and just so fucked up. And like, when I think about it, I saw Britney in her circus tour, which I think was 2010. And she did amazing, and she was in the conservatorship at that time. And like, I feel like that was when she kind of still had the fire in her a little bit. Another thing that's my opinion that she doesn't say in the book, but I feel reading back kind of what I thought, I don't think she realized how long this conservatorship would go on, or just kind of like how unfair this consequence was, which she realizes now. But if you kind of going back to what I said about everything being in plain sight, if you go back and watch the trailer or clips on YouTube of Britney's For the Record documentary that she kind of did after this whole chaotic chapter in her life, like after the head shaving and everything, it was kind of right before the VMAs where she won all the VMAs for Piece of Me and everything. But she says in that documentary that she's like, my life is Groundhog's Day, and like the lawyers are too much in control. Like, people make mistakes all the time, but I feel like I'm having to pay for it a really long time, and like starts crying right there. So she's basically telling us, like, I'm under the control of these lawyers and it's horrible, and they force me into this like identical schedule I do every day, and like it's horrible. So it's just sad that like even at that time she was feeling that and that was happening. It's kind of like, again, what I said earlier about like, we could have launched this Free Britney movement right when this all started, but that's just not really where we were as a culture back then. So unfortunately, she just kind of like was stuck in this horrible, horrible thing. Yeah, I don't know. And it's just kind of, my friend asked me, she's like, what about like Sam and like her other boyfriends? And like, she does talk about them and like, she paints them in a pretty good light for the most part, but like, she doesn't really go into that much detail. And like, a lot of people think that they were like staged relationships. I don't know if they were, or like how monitored they were. She makes it seem like they weren't, and I don't think they really were. Honestly, I don't really give a fuck about those boyfriends or Sam Asghari or whatever. But she does talk about how she wanted to take her IUD out and they pretty much wouldn't let her. And I don't know. Yeah. But she does also mention how she basically says, Justin and K-Fed used me, which is pretty like bold to say, and just sad that that's truly where she's arrived and what she believes. But I also believe that. It's just crazy that she, you know, kind of is self-aware enough to recognize that. And she says she doesn't really trust anyone anymore, which how fucking could you with everything that her family has done to her? And just I mean, it's just kind of amazing that this woman is still kicking and that she's able to function on a daily basis after just reading in one sitting, which, yeah, I listened to the entire book of one sitting. It's like, whoa. I mean, it's a lot. Like, bitch went through the mud. But, oh, she mentions multiple times how Jamie Lynn is just a bitch, ungrateful bitch, which I thought was funny. And I love that she used that language. I mean, there are just some great zingers that she uses that are just so Britney. That, like, oh god, I can't think of any right now. I wish I like took note of it, but it's just like I said about like it being in her tone and her voice, and it's like only Britney would really say this. So yeah, she definitely included that in whichever, you know, recording session part of writing this book. And yeah, oh, also just like the whole self-aware thing, it is very fascinating to me how someone can, like, she's like, I'm getting really weird, or I was getting weird. She like describes herself as weird and her behaviors and her actions at different times as weird. So she's like, I recognize that like that is out of the social norm, you know? And it's just like, it's really like good and refreshing to see that she's aware of that. But then it's also sad and it's very like interesting. And it's fascinating to me. And it's just like, wow, like, I guess this is just what happens. These are the consequences of like this type of fame, is like she's now just a strange person because like she was treated so abnormally being as famous as she was. So now she behaves very abnormally. And yeah, she's just, you know, a woman in her 40s now, kind of first just now discovering who she is and who she's going to be. And kind of, yeah, I feel like she's at the stage of self-discovery that most people are in their like mid to late teens, you know, kind of like high school age, of like, oh, like what happens if I behave this way, or what if I make this joke, or what if I write this, or like what if I decide to wear this, you know? It's like all these experimental boundary things we did at a very young age, she's just now doing in her 40s. It's just, yeah, I mean, I'm glad that she's free and that she's able to live her truth now, and that the conservatorship is over, and that the Free Britney movement happened, and that our queen can finally live a life she wants to live. And honestly, I don't give a fuck if she ever releases new music or ever she ever goes on tour. Like, that's not something I really want from her anymore. Like, she gave us so much. She was pretty much defined a decade of like the early 2000s and even the like tail end of the 90s. And she was still very significant for the last, you know, 10 years. Like, she's always been fucking Britney Spears. Like, she will always be our queen and will always stan. And yeah, I've gotten enough content from her, and I would rather enjoy all of that than force her into doing more shit she doesn't want to do. Maybe she'll do other things later down the road that or her genuine interests, but I don't want her to feel pressured into working or doing anything that's, you know, not to her liking, because that's what she deserves. She deserves to do whatever Britney wants to do, because you know what? We didn't let her, and that was really wrong. And you know what? How dare you, Mr. Spears? You had me fooled. And you too, Mrs. Spears. Death to all of them. If you don't know that reference, that's Wendy Williams, probably one of the best clips from her ever. But yeah, okay, that's where I'm gonna leave it. Oh god, love the Beckhams, especially Victoria. Obviously Britney is, you know, a god to, I was gonna say to just gay men, but honestly to everyone, women, gay men, even straight men. Like, Britney Spears is you know, a pivotal figure in millennial generation, everyone, you know, anyone that is alive and has been alive for the past 25 years, Britney has been a significant part of your life. So we thank her for that. We love her. We love this book. If you haven't listened or read, go do it. I prefer and would recommend listening, because you get the inflection of Michelle Williams, and it's just a beautiful experience. But all right, that's another episode of Girl Blogger. My voice is, I'm done talking. So, all right. Bye, bitches.